Hello and welcome to another episode of Matinee Mondays here on the Remnants of Reese's Remember All. Today we're doing an older episode. This is one of the episodes that was mentioned in the channel trailer, so take some time, sit back, relax, and please remember, all of the socials are outdated, and enjoy. Lovers, and welcome back to another episode of Robert's Reviews. I am your host, Robert McPeak, and this week we are going to be going over Thor Ragnarok. This movie is setting us up for the review in a couple of weeks on The Infinity War, as this one, as well as Black Panther, set us up directly for The Infinity War, more so than the others. But before we dive right into that, I want to go over a couple of things here with this show and a bit of movie news, a new weekly segment before the review actually begins. It's also the time where I get to be a little less formal, and we may be taking our shows here on the network in that direction. Now, diving right on into movie news. And keeping with the theme of the movie, our news this week comes from Disney. Not Marvel. Sorry to spoil that one for you guys. But Disney has a continuation on a classic film that I know so many people grew up on and so many people just absolutely loved. Coming up that has a lot of controversy around it, much like Jumanji did, is Mary Poppins. However, I do have to say with a couple of things that I saw this week that I do have a bit of hope for the movie. Now, it's not much more hope, but it is a little bit more than I had before. Dick Van Dyke has been asked what he thinks about it and where he stands on the new Mary Poppins. I'll link to the mini interview down below in the show notes, so keep an eye out there for that. He pretty much says that he's all on board for it. He's excited about it and looking forward to taking part in this film. And yeah, you heard that right. He is taking part in this film. I'm not going to say where or who he's playing. I will leave that for Mr. Van Dyke to say himself. As far as the remainder of the movie goes, I have to say that I'm a bit hesitant. The only thing that kind of has me a little saddened is that, as far as I've seen, Julie Andrews isn't going to be a part of it. I do hope, I haven't seen anything on this, so if you guys have seen anywhere that Mary Poppins 2 is going to be another musical movie, please send me those articles, send me those links, let me see those interviews, hit me with this information, because this is one project that Disney's been working on that I'm not so sure about, and I'd love to find out more about what's going on and just delve into that. So, we have our news that Dick Van Dyke is in support and he's going to be in the new Mary Poppins. That, for me, it was just something that just kind of warmed my heart and gave me a little bit more hope. Alright, that's going to do it for movie news today. With that, I just want to take a moment and talk about how things are going to be going and why I skipped the ritual. That Netflix film, not necessarily a Netflix original, but it has Netflix original attached to it. And we'll get more into that when we come up and do the review. And I say we there because a friend of mine wants to review that with me. She wants to come on as a horror film lover and aficionado. She is very deep into the horror film culture, so she's asked if she can help me out with that and to see if our discussion can help her understand some of the lore behind the movie, The Ritual. So with that, that kind of brings me right into one of the things that is going to be going on as we move forward. This is one of the more exciting bits, is that one of the things that I'm looking at trying to do and working on making a reality is having guest reviewers, people that I know that are very well-rounded and astute in the genres and the culture surrounding particular films, being able to have guests on to discuss certain movies is something that really makes it feel more of a conversation, not only for me, but for the audience. So that will bring an extra layer of engagement. So with having other people come on board with this, it's not really going to change too much, but I'm hoping just enough to bring up different perspectives and create multiple trains of thought going about different topics within the movies themselves as the review goes on, as the review takes place. One of the other things is more engagement on Twitter, and I have taken down the Patreon to get some work going on it, because one of the other things that I'm going to be doing is opening this up not just from recent releases, but more classic films, the older films. So with what's going to be going on the Patreon, just keep an eye out on it. I will be announcing when it relaunches. It is still there, but I've just been working on it. And I'm really excited about some of the changes that I have been making to it and getting that all set up for all of you to be able to engage there as well. So not only will you have Facebook, Twitter, but you'll also have Patreon. So please bear with me while that all is worked out, worked on, and keep an eye out for when I relaunch that. That's going to be an exciting date. I don't know how soon that's going to be. I'm hoping within the next couple of weeks, but realistically, it'll probably be the beginning of August, the end of July. I know that's not too terribly long away, but that's about a month away from now. So 4 weeks, I believe in me, and I believe in this community that we're going to be working on building here within the network and the community that I'm going to be building with all of you. And as a final bit of news, this is the really exciting part. We are now up on iTunes. One of the reasons why I waited so long before getting up onto iTunes was because some of the research that I had seen was that it's best to wait until you have about 5 episodes and then put everything up on iTunes, and that'll just give you better visibility and everything else. So I wanted to wait until I had just about 5 episodes, and with having to take a small hiatus because of family issues, not necessarily issues, but there were complications within the family, and just some other things that were going on with personal life. Things just happened one right after the other, and I apologize to all of you. I'm going to be doing a lot better moving forward about keeping up on this. Even in this blistering heat in Michigan, it's not so much the heat, everybody, as it is the humidity. I don't like humidity. Heat is fine. Give me the sun. That gets me out to the beach. But, no, none of this humidity crap. So, with all of that out of the way, let's jump right on into Thor Ragnarok. And I just have to say, right out of the gate, the first thing I thought when I saw the trailer on this was just, why? Now, don't get me wrong, I really did enjoy the graphic novel for Thor Ragnarok. That kept a lot of the actual lore of the Norse Ragnarok tales. Though the inclusion of a frog version of Thor, that threw me off a little bit. Not gonna lie, that was a little odd to me at the time, but then I delved more into the comics on Thor, and it made more sense. Within the comic, all of the other Thors show up, and they offer to help, but Thor's kind of like, oh no, I can do this on my own, and then he goes off and pretty much becomes the new Odin, and is like, you know, maybe I could do with some help, so let's do this. And all of the Thors get together and fight it out, you know, all of the Thors that were available and around at that time just pitched in. I thought that was kind of cool, but in the moment, you know, seeing a frog Thor kind of threw me off until I went digging into where he came from. And I'm not going to spoil any of that, because you got to read that. That is some fine writing right there. That is some good stuff. That's that grade A stuff. I kind of say that sarcastically, but it was just fun. It was just a fun little comic that introduced the frog Thor. So go ahead, go hunt that down and find that, because you're just going to enjoy that. If comics are your thing, you're going to really enjoy it. But my initial thoughts on that, having been, I hope they don't mess it up, they kind of did, and we're going to get right into that. But first, we're going to talk about the specs and the cast. Alright, so diving right into the specs. The runtime is 131 minutes, or 2 hours, and roughly 11 minutes. And this is if you're also including the cutscene at the end. Rating of PG-13. The genre is action, adventure, teen, and I would even go so far as to say science fiction or fantasy. The budget was $180 million, and at the time of my notes, it had grossed $853 million. That's a lot. This was written by Taika Waititi, who also appears in the film, but we'll get to that in a little bit. This was written by Craig Kyle, Eric Pearson, and Christopher Yost. The score was composed by Mark, and I'm sorry, I'm going to slaughter your last name. The music was composed by Mark Mothersbaugh. I apologize if I slaughtered that last name. Apparently, I'm not that great with names. Starring Chris Hemsworth as Thor, Tom Hiddleston as Loki, Kate Blanchett as Hela, Idris Elba as Heimdall, Jeff Goldblum as Grandmaster, Tessa Thompson as Valkyrie, Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner / the Hulk, Carl Urban as Scourge, Anthony Hopkins as Odin, Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange, and Sam Neill made an appearance in this as the actor who played Odin. Yeah, we're gonna get to that in a moment. Alright, so for the main bulk of my notes on this, Surtur, right there at the beginning, I like the fact that he was using a German sword. Kind of makes sense, and it was just kind of a fun scene overall. That whole Heimdall, get me out of here, and it's actually Scourge showing off his stuff. Him with Dez and Troy, and just trying to impress some girls right there in the beginning while all of this is going on, and Thor's been missing for 2 years because he's been out searching for the Infinity Stones. Just all of it. It set the tone for the rest of the movie. You know, kind of a Thor being snide and snarky to the bad guys while also being, you know, completely serious and ready to smash everything in his sight. I think that if that had been the tone that was kept throughout, rather than forced humor at the wrong times, I think that it would have landed a lot better for me. And I will say that the humor did play a lot better for me on the second go around than on the first, but it still didn't land as well as I think that Taika had intended it to as director. You know, you have that vision of how things are going to land and how everything is just going to play out with the script that you've got and the talent and everything else. And it just seemed like he let his own silliness go a little bit too overboard. But, I mean, you could really tell everybody was having fun. This was kind of one of the big upturns before the drop that was Infinity War. And Black Panther kind of primed that downturn, so it was like a little down, you know, a little down plateau, and then Infinity War was just that massive drop. You know, emotionally, it just kind of wrecked everyone. And Thor Ragnarok was that last little glint of humor and hope. You know, as a overarching film, it really did kind of hit those notes right, and in a way that made everything just kind of mellow out throughout the whole movie. So I think that if we had gotten something like that with Infinity War, it would have been completely, I cannot stress that enough, completely inappropriate, because Infinity War was even more of a heavy hitter than Thor Ragnarok. So, my notes are a little out of order. Please bear with me on that. So, this is just going to be bouncing all over the place for a little while. And with a Marvel movie and having had so many discussions on all of these Marvel movies, that's kind of what ends up happening. So, I hope that this kind of resembles a discussion that you would have about a Marvel movie. I don't know if anybody noticed this or is a big enough Cumberbatch fan, but Doctor Strange's address is 177A Bleecker Street, while Sherlock Holmes is 221B Baker Street. Ben definitely has a role type if you look at Doctor Strange, Sherlock Holmes. Well then, motorcycle going by and had to rip. Ben really has a archetype that he can't really escape. If you look at Doctor Strange and Sherlock Holmes, and one could even make the case for Star Trek's Khan, that smarter than everyone else in the room, better than everybody, and he knows it. And he's not afraid to let you know that he's better than you in every possible way. And it's kind of that role. And I mean, if we're going to go there, we could even throw in Smaug. Oh, sorry. Smaug. I was not a fan of that name change, because growing up, I had The Hobbit read to me as a very little one. And when I reread it, and it was read in school, it was always Smaug. Like S-M-O-G, but if they're trying to go that route, it should kind of be Smug or Smug, because you know, English is a very weird and complicated language, and I applaud them for being different with the name of Smaug the Dragon. You won't catch me saying Smaug ever again, so get that clip if you really wanted it. But Ben showing up in Thor was really nice, and to see the crossover, because years ago when they dismissed the magic in Thor as just really advanced technology that we as humans don't understand yet, that kind of seemed like a brush off, and as a fan, I was just kind of like, what? Now we're never going to get another, like, Doctor Strange. We're not going to get all of these, you know, others But here we are. We've got Doctor Strange now. So the next thing I'm hoping for that they can break the glass ceiling of is give us the mutants. Bring over the X-Men universe, especially now that the Fox deal has gone through. Come on, Sony. Just finish making up the deal and let's get the X-Men into this universe and Scarlet Witch back into being a mutant and not some experiment, because that hurts as someone who loves the X-Men more than the Avengers. Yeah, I'm sorry, that's gonna upset some people, but it is what it is. I've always liked the mutants a lot more. So we're just gonna see how this goes, and hopefully we're able to get that. But back on track, I like the fact that they cut Thor's hair. It makes Chris look a lot younger than he looked in Thor 2. In Thor 2, he looked a bit older, and when he showed up in the Avengers, he was just starting to look older. The long hair kind of highlighted the crow's feet setting in, and just it washed him out. So them cutting up his hair made him look younger, and you can make the joke that, oh, hey, Thor, got your haircut. Took a couple hundred years off. So, I know, bad joke, bad Robert. But on the whole thing with in the realm of the Grandmaster, Loki's panic attack or the Hulk showing up, it's priceless. And so is his love that Thor got the crap beat out of him. I mean, Loki really was able to shine a little bit more as that guy that's, you know, been kicked, that's gotten down and been kicked so many times while he's down. Now seeing other people be able to get the same treatment that he got and revel in it, that's such a Loki thing, and I liked seeing him be able to have that and have those moments. And I think that this was also a really good way for them to bring back in Hulk, because as a fan of the MCU, my big question was, what the heck happened to Hulk? Okay, we've got Civil War that's taken place, and we've got a couple other movies that have been put out, and we've got no Hulk. No mention of him, not even a throwaway line, and then, boom, Thor Ragnarok, and there he is. It was one of those hyped moments, and that fight in the arena was spectacular. Now, how Thor got into that mess was Hela. And more specifically, what was he doing with Doctor Strange? Doctor Strange having been who picked up Thor and, you know, put Loki in a pocket dimension and had him falling for a half hour. I don't blame Loki for his anger. I mean, there was a lot in this movie that was completely justified and made complete sense. So Strange picks up Thor and is like, yo, look, y'all can't be here. Y'all put the Earth in danger. I ain't having it. And Thor's just like, dude, we're here for my dad. And he's like, oh, if I take you to your father, if I send you to your dad, are you going to leave? Both of you. Well, all of you. And Thor's just like, well, yeah. And the comedy that happened in that moment, in that whole scene, in all of that that went down, it was situational. It wasn't forced. It was just natural. Thor's used to being the impressive one, and he's being whipped around like a rag doll through this place by Doctor Strange, who's gotten used to teleportation magic, and just turning around and being in another room at the other end of the Sanctum Sanctorum. I mean, come on now. Thor's not used to this, and the fact that Thor gets his own, you know, little revenge in little things. If you haven't seen the movie, please do yourself a favor and do watch it, because there is a lot more good than there is annoying crap that happens in Thor Ragnarok. So really do go and check that out. And the fact that, you know, they get taken to Odin and Anthony Hopkins gave one of the most amazing performances that I think anybody could have ever possibly given for Odin at the end of his life. It was touching, it was moving, and his write-off was so amazing, and I am so, so happy they didn't undercut it with some bad joke, and that they just allowed the drama to build because Thor is getting mad, and his umbrella, aka his hammer, but his hammer's disguised as umbrella, and I really like that he's able to do that now. It's perfect. It's wonderful. I think that that was just beautiful. You know, he's clutching his umbrella, getting upset. The storm's rolling in, and then all of a sudden, Big Sister Hela appears. Which, for those who don't know, and I'm sure there have been plenty of videos going up about this, Hela is actually Loki's daughter, and Fenrir is Hela's brother. So Hela is not actually Odin's kid, but in the MCU, Hela is Odin's secret child. Well, actually not just in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but in the Marvel Comic Universe. But I think that's been, you know, up for debate depending on the author. When Hela was involved, I didn't pay too much attention, because it's Hela. but Hela being actually a sibling to Thor and Loki was just, it didn't hit with me. And I think it would have done better for me if it had been Eva Green and not Cate Blanchett. Don't get me wrong, Cate Blanchett is wonderful. She is amazing. And she really did nail this down. But I think Eva Green would have done miles better. But then again, this has been Eva's wheelhouse for a long time. That scarred and damaged, angry psycho. She's played that many a times before. And I think the casting directors were afraid that it would just come off as, oh, it's Eva Green. Kind of like how Johnny Depp showing up somewhere and being silly is just like, oh, it's Johnny Depp being Johnny Depp. So I understand why they made that differentiation and chose to go a different route. Not a big fan of it because I think, like I said, I think Eva could have done that. But then again, biased fanboy of Eva right here. This was also a good point for Cate to kind of branch out and go from being known as Galadriel and step into something a little bit more fun, because as an elf in a Tolkien story, there's a lot more pressure on you than there is here, where she could, well, let her hair down from that horny little helmet she was wearing and have some fun. But that whole thing with her showing up and destroying Thor's hammer, sending them into the realm of the Grandmaster, and then as soon as they're gone, she comes into Asgard, kicks butt, takes over, and just annihilates people, and takes out We Warriors 3 without breaking a sweat, and she's laughing and having fun, and Scourge is just kind of standing there like, what? Okay. So, I really do like that, you know, they continue to assert Hela's dominance, but I don't think it really would have worked as a Ragnarok situation. And the fact that Ragnarok was sparked in the end by Thor and Loki, you know, Thor and friends incited Surtur's destruction of Asgard in the end. I think that was a little rough. Because the whole thing with Ragnarok is that it's the end of everything. And it's the end of it all. And it begins again. So Asgard having been destroyed, there's a lot of emotional baggage with this movie for me. Simply because I follow the Asatru Norse Viking path of faith, this movie is kind of in conflict with that. And I had a harder time separating the two than I did with the previous two, because it was just like, oh, you know, modern day Avengers of Thor, you know, and that's what I really liked about that. But this took something fundamental, and rather than like within the comics, it altered that and was like, oh, you know, here's a thing, and here's something a little more malevolent going on behind the scenes, and why there have been so many, you know, restarts to Asgard and the gods and all of that. You know, there are these malevolent beings behind it all, and then Thor just kind of gives them a big middle finger and says, F you, I'm not doing this, and does his own thing. Which is kind of a callback to what Thor from the sagas and the Eddas would do. He would do that. And I think if they had cut out some of the Taika humor with his character showing up, you know, the whole character was a joke on rock, paper, scissors. It was unneeded. We didn't need it for this movie. And like I said, I understand why they did it, but from the other perspective, did we really need all of that extra humor? It was nice to see that one of the things that we actually got was the Valkyries. We found out why the Valkyries had been missing, where they'd been wiped out. Well, all except for one, played by Tessa. Tessa did a very good job playing a Valkyrie living in disgrace in the realm of the Grandmaster. And Jeff Goldblum, with his chemistry with Chris and Tom and Tessa, was just absolutely amazing. And I do honestly think that they just kind of went, hey, who could we get that's kind of silly and eccentric? And everybody in the writer's room just kind of stopped and looked around and went, all in unison, Jeff Goldblum. So I think that they all just kind of did that and asked him, hey, do you want to just show up and have a premise and goof off for a couple of months? And Jeff Goldblum just, he nailed that. It was serious, but also not. It was a perfect balance of crazy, silly, and you're kind of worried that this guy is just going to kill you. Like, he's a very lighthearted version of the Joker, because he could kill you for the color of your shoelaces because he doesn't like them today. And tomorrow he could let you live because he doesn't like the color of your shoelaces, but he's going to give you another chance. You know, so, like, he's got that whole Joker air of crazy, and I think that did well. Mark Ruffalo showing up as Hulk in this was phenomenal. That whole, I've been the Hulk for over 2 years. What? That struggle was really nice. And I think we could have explored that a little bit more because it was a buddy cop film. You know, it was that buddy comedy that really just kind of should have been played off a little bit more. Idris Elba was kind of a side role in this for Heimdall, but he also did very well as Heimdall, as always. And I do think that Heimdall would have been that guy to hide everybody away and try and save as many people as he possibly could. So I think that was a very good choice, with Asgard having been taken over by force and the use of his power. That was Heimdall. I do have to say that I liked the fact that he's less crazy in the Marvel Universe than in the Eddas and the sagas. He's a little more unhinged in the Old Norse tales than we see him in the Marvel Universe, which gives him a little bit more relatability. Makes him seem like he's come to terms with his abilities. And everybody's holding on to the fact that he can see souls, which to me says that, okay, that's either his inherent ability or he's had contact with the soul stone. And if not, anything to do with the Soul Stone. Fine, that's just Heimdall's powers, or the Marvel Universe. So, I don't really put any stock in the whole, oh, you know, Heimdall has the Soul Stone, which we see that he didn't if you saw Infinity War. Hate to break it to you, you haven't seen Infinity War. Heimdall doesn't have the Soul Stone, so, you know, you can put that theory up on a shelf. Sorry about the helicopter in the background. One of the main reasons that I say that the humor lands a bit better, but its use in tandem to the heavy-hitting moments of high emotion, I could have done without that. I didn't need to see Asgard explode and become no more, and the prophecy of Ragnarok fulfilled, and then a joke. Like, why was that necessary? You know, this is a moment where we should all be feeling things, and the only thing I feel is wanting to punch this thing in the face, you know? I want to punch this guy square in the face. I realize I'm going to lose my hand because he's made of stone, but still, it was just too much, if you ask me. So, one of the things that happened, if you look at the featurettes, is there's a cameo by Yondu during the execution scene, right as Carl Urban is about to swing the axe down and execute somebody. Yondu comes crashing through and goes, hey, wait. And he has a comedic bit and then walks off. And as he's walking off, he goes, okay, carry on. Like, he doesn't even care that there's an execution of somebody about to happen. I went back and I watched that deleted cutscene, you know, 4 or 5 times, and the more I watched it, the more I was like, you know, if they were going to devote to the silly humor at those high tense moments, they should have just kept this in, especially with the actor for Yondu sitting down and going through bull makeup. I mean, he was in bull makeup, bull costume, and he was ready to go. But also, with watching that many times, I was able to see the people in the background, and they were just, like, shocked, surprised, and a lot of them were laughing hysterically. So it was, like, something that they did once and was like, okay, we had our joke, go on, you know? So it was nice to see, and I think that that would have done well if that whole era of we're just being silly to be silly is what Taika was going to go for. And in retrospect, I'm glad that he didn't put it in, that it was left out. But I'm also happy that it was left as a deleted scene for us to see. And I do apologize about the train in the background. And right there at the end, you know, Thor had to come into his own with his power, with his abilities, as something he hadn't been able to do since Hela destroyed his hammer. I mean, since that point, he was lost, and he thought he needed his hammer or some other tool in order to function, in order to have any kind of power. I mean, as Odin said, in some sort of weird dream state, what are you, the god of hammers or the god of thunder? And that really got Thor thinking and helped him to realize that it wasn't the hammer. The hammer was just a tool. It was a way for him to focus his abilities, to channel them. And I really liked that, and that whole scene right there at the end. Their use of the Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin to show his coming to terms. That epic boom in that fight, and him just unleashing upon the hordes of the dead. That was absolutely amazing on the bridge. And there's so much more that can be gone over with this movie. So I think where I'm going to leave off is right here with, that was a waste of Sam Neill. See, I said it in the beginning, and I said we'd come back around to that. Sam Neill played Odin in a play on Asgard for Odin, who was watching, and that Odin was being played by Loki. So that whole scene made me giggle. And the fact that it was Sam Neill playing Odin, to me, it was great. I loved seeing him in it, don't get me wrong. Just seeing him in the Marvel Universe was great. But I think that there's another place that could have been found for him. And with the fact that he was so unrecognizable, makes it easy for him to slip in into a future Marvel film later. And I really, really do hope that he slips into a future Marvel film as a lead, or even a secondary, like a sidekick, the older sidekick, kind of like how, you know, Hank Pym is usually known as the Ant-Man, but is now kind of the old guy. So I think for Sam Neill, something like that might work out. Or, you know, something like Mark Ruffalo playing Bruce Banner. You know, he looks a bit older than he actually is. And it might just work out for him. We'll see. We'll see what the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe holds as Infinity War Part 2 comes out. And as more information is being made known about that, I may or may not look into it, because it's one of those big franchises that I really just kind of want to dive into and look up the pre-trailer spoilers and the trailer breakdowns. But at the same time, I try and avoid all of that. So with that little tidbit about Sam Neill showing up, so, for me, my final thoughts are that this is a departure from everything we know about Ragnarok. From the Pros and Eddas to the Marvel comic universe, this is something else entirely. This is its own direction, and we just all have to get used to it. I'm going to have to get used to it, because I'm, like I said in the beginning, I liked the comic rendition. I liked that so much. It was great. And this was something else entirely. And it is what it is. It was good for what it was, what it was trying to be, what it was trying to do. It had its pitfalls, like every film out there does, but you do what you can with what you've got, and they did a pretty good job. Though, on the personal Robert meter, I still give it a 3 out of 5. Simply because of the humor hitting in the wrong places, inclusion of characters that just weren't needed, and not enough time on subject matter that should have been focused a little bit more on. So, with that, I bid you all a fond farewell, and I will see you next time right here. Robert's Reviews is part of the Zion's Edge Network, and if you enjoy what we do here at the network, go ahead, subscribe, give us a rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. Feel free to reach out to me here on Facebook and on Twitter at Robert_McPeak. Keep an eye out for updates on the Patreon, over on my Twitter, and over on Facebook. You can find us over on Facebook at Robert's Reviews. Searching Robert's Reviews up in the search bar, you will find the show page. And this is Robert. Good night and good luck.